Welcome to The Big Table with me, Philip Limbury, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today American businessman and executive chair of Beyond Meat, Seth Goldman. Seth, welcome to London.
Thank you, Philip. So nice to be with you.
It's fantastic to have you here, and I think you're over here with some very exciting news.
Yes.
Can you tell us more?
Sure, yeah. Tomorrow and the next day, we will be launching and announcing the arrival of the Beyond Burger, a project that we've launched in the United States to great acclaim, and we're finally, our first market for Europe will be London and the UK.
Well, that's fantastic. And I know that the Beyond Burger has been creating huge excitement on both sides of the Atlantic. I've personally had the great pleasure to try it twice, one in America at a barbecue held by our executive director of Compassionate World Farming, Leah Garces. Yes. And I was given one burger and I ended up eating three. They were delicious. The other time, of course, was you very kindly brought some over to our London conference. We had an Extinction and Livestock conference in October, and I had the chore of eating your wonderful burgers with Joanna Lumley. Our patron, which was a great deal of fun. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about your experience at the conference when you came over with us. How was that?
Sure, it was a wonderful gathering. Really, first of all, amazing group of people and clear sense of purpose and excitement about the changes that I think we all see happening in terms of more flexitarian diets and the ripples that has both through our ecosystem, through our health, and of course through the population of animals that affect it as well.
And the Beyond Meat burger, your company strategy is somewhat different to many of the plant-based food companies on the market. And if I'm right in saying that, you insist on having your products next to the meat rather than somewhere in the vegan aisle. What's the strategy there?
Sure. Well, there are two important parts of our strategy that I do think set us apart. So one has to do with, first, the way we make the burger. And I think that up till now, most of veggie burgers have basically been, the strategy has been to sort of mush different ingredients together and call that an alternative to meat. And we go about it a different way. We actually started with an MRI of a hamburger. And we said, look at the way that's assembled and let's understand what that means. So 70% of it's water. Okay, water is water. But then the rest is amino acids that form the proteins. And what we said, let's find the same amino acids from the plant kingdom. And we source ours primarily from peas. And then there's a great component that's fats, the lipids. And so those we can also extract from canola oil and coconut oil. And then there's some trace minerals and carbohydrates, all of which occur, not at all proprietary or exclusive to the animal kingdom. But then we said, all right, we've got the ingredients, but what's really the magic of meat is the way the fats and the proteins are stitched together. And we can use heat and water and pressure and cooling to bring them together in a way such that they actually replicate the sensory experience of meat. So that's the first important difference. And then we said, if we've got a product that smells like meat, sizzles like meat, chars like meat, and tastes like meat, then it really should be in the meat counter. And in turn, we should be targeting not just the vegetarian and vegan, though we obviously love that community of people, but we want to reach the much larger audience, the 95% of people who don't self-identify as vegan and vegetarian. And we know that those people don't buy their protein in the freezer section. So we've got to bring our product to the meat counter. And we actually want to transform the meat counter into the protein counter. And so that's the key. Those are the two key pillars of our strategy.
And are you seeing a difference in sales by placing it in the meat aisle rather than the vegetarian chiller?
Dramatic difference. So in general, a vegan burger in a freezer section of a store, you may move a case or two a week. That's sort of good hurdle rates. We've got the Beyond Burger now in most of the mainstream grocery stores throughout the United States. And in many parts of the United States, the Beyond Burger is now the top-selling burger, packaged burger, in the meat section. Not the top-selling plant-based burger, but just the top-selling burger. And that is extraordinary. We never, when we went to the meat section, we sort of hoped we could hold our own. To see that kind of velocity is transformational, very, very exciting for us. And frankly, as part of the movement, we think something that's exciting for the movement here, too.
Well, that's very exciting and deeply impressive. And tell me a little bit more about your aspirations here in the UK and Europe. What's going
to
happen?
Well, so we're so excited to be here because when we launched the Beyond Burger in 2017 in the United States, since that time, we've received more inquiries from the UK than from any other country outside the United States. So we knew this was a market receptive and eager to have it. We are announcing this week that we are launching in two outlets right now. One is a chain called Honest Burgers, and then the other is Tesco. We're going to be in 350 Tesco grocery stores and their cafes starting in August. And then Honest Burgers gets started on July 9th. So tomorrow's the kickoff of these this launch.
Tesco, of course, is the biggest retailer and is also quite unique in the British marketplace because it has a director of plant-based innovation in Derek Sarno, who I think you know.
So Derek worked with me back when he was at Whole Foods and back when I was launching Honest Tea, starting as long as 20 years ago. And so wonderful to have him here and helping to bring, you know, the burger. And we recognize that Tesco is a more, I would say, mainstream retailer, but for us that's very exciting. This is going back to our strategy. We love the healthy and wealthy, but we want to be available to everybody.
Exactly. You know, egalitarian and having the very best burgers available to everyone. And why do you actually think it's important for people to have plant-based protein of this kind readily available? Why is it so important?
Well, if we can become a seamless replacement for animal-based protein, then our product with no cholesterol and half the saturated fat of a burger, so there's a great health impact and opportunity. On top of that, there's a transformational environmental impact as well. I mean, if we our product can use so much less land, so much less water than it takes to feed and nourish a cow over 9 months, it's not just sort of percentage differences, it's multiples, much lighter footprint. So environmentally, we think that's exciting as well. We have seen so many people coming towards this kind of approach. So we just think, of course, all the ripples are very positive.
And I saw recently new scientific study which is talking about agricultural land really occupying nearly half the usable land surface of the planet. And that 83% of that agricultural land is used to produce livestock products, which only produce 37% of humanity's protein. And I think what will be a big surprise to many people is not only that that livestock products produce so little protein for so much land, but that the flip side to that is that most of humanity's protein right here, right now, comes from plants. And that seems to me to be a fantastic stage for your product, bringing out the taste and texture of meat, but with a fraction of the environmental impact. And what's been the reaction to that offering in the U.S.?
Well, just to go back to your point first, I mean, the cow is a very inefficient processor of protein. And so you just think about how much plant material has to pass through a cow to end up with a pound of protein. And instead, what if you just took those plants and converted them directly into a burger? First of all, we think that's actually a better opportunity for the farmer because they're selling. It's always better to sell the crop that's the human consumes. So rather than selling a crop for cows to consume, a farmer should be able to make more money growing, for example, the peas that then a human can consume as you know, a form of a burger. So we think that's an important piece to note. What's interesting, we've seen in the United States all types of reactions to the product. So we have certain companies like Tyson, a big meat company that's invested in us, and that's an interesting step. At the same time, we've seen groups like the Cattlemen's Association raise concerns about the labeling of meat. We had a state, Missouri, that did pass a law prohibiting the use of meat-like terms around products that aren't from a slaughtered animal, as they call it. My point of view is the consumer here is in charge, and so the consumer is going to be, if there's demand from the consumer for this product, that's the most encouraging sign. And, you know, you could say, I can't call my phone my cell phone a phone because it's not plugged into a wall, but I'm still going to use it to make calls if it's the if it delivers the function I need. And I think I'm not that worried about this industry response if we can continue to create a great tasting burger that consumers want to eat.
What I was really surprised to see was that Friends of the Earth in the U.S. has been making some statements, not all positive, about plant-based and clean meat innovations. What's going on there?
They've raised concerns about certain companies, none that I know of about our company. So I think their concern was more about certain approaches. You know, some companies use GMOs to make their product. We don't use any GMOs. Some companies, according to Friends of the Earth, some of the science and the safety isn't proven. Or even on meat replication, you know, because it hasn't really been done, they were unsure about the use of resources on it. But as far as I know, they've been extremely supportive of our approach.
And a question that I often get asked is, if the main constituent of the Beyond Meat burger is pea protein, does it taste like peas? What's the answer to that?
No, it doesn't. What we've developed is science that is actually plant agnostic. So we are able to strip out the off notes of the flavor. And frankly, although we use peas today, we can be using mung beans, rice protein, sunflower protein, buckwheat. So the goal as we scale this business is to be globally available and to use the local plant material available. So it really isn't, it doesn't taste like peas. It just has a very nice taste to it.
And I can certainly confirm that. It tastes absolutely delicious. And I don't have a favorite burger, of course, but if I did, it would be the Beyond Meat burger. Absolutely fantastic taste.
Thank you. Well, Seth,
what got you into this? What was your motivation?
So I have just 20 years ago started a company called Honest Tea, organic lower-calorie beverage company. And about in 2011, we sold to Coca-Cola. I still was involved, but I was looking for that next entrepreneurial opportunity. And so, you know, Beyond Meat, my wife actually discovered it. She was reading an article about this company getting started. It happened to be her birthday, and she said, if this company succeeded, it would be the best birthday gift ever. And so I was maybe hadn't done the best birthday gift shopping. So I said, let me reach out to them. Let me see if I can get involved. And I sent an email to info@beyondmeat.com and said I'd love to help if there's any interest. And they were very welcoming of my involvement. And I became an investor and then a board member and then executive chair of the board. And I've just enjoyed it so much. It's very mission-driven, very high impact, very big opportunity as well. So when you can combine the opportunity for impact and the opportunity for growth, that's kind of my sweet spot, and I've just really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. And what I was intrigued when I was reading your bio, Seth, was that you got a very impressive education at Harvard and Yale, and you studied government and politics.
Right.
So this wasn't really the field that you were looking at originally. Where were you headed before you came into this field?
I was a government major, and I wasn't involved in politics, and I thought that was kind of the most effective route to have an impact. But once I started working in government and in Capitol Hill, I felt like it was a few steps too removed from the impact I wanted to be involved in. And so I actually almost accidentally discovered that business could have this role. And for me, it has absolutely been so gratifying to feel like we can have this impact on diet and on the environment, on the issues I care about. And in some cases, you know, I don't want to draw a comparison, but wonderful allies, groups like Compassion World Farming or PETA, who are trying to convince consumers about the important role we can play in compassion for animals. And so we're two sides of the same coin, because as much as we need the nonprofits to raise the awareness, I feel like a company like Beyond Meat can help provide the solution. And so, you know, as we know, the percentage of people who are vegan or vegetarian has been stuck. It's around, in the U.S., at least 5% for decades. If we can bring a product that will bring more people to this, we may not get the percentage of vegetarians to increase, but we will get far more families and people choosing plant-based meals, which is net effect, like doubling or tripling the amount of vegetarians in the population.
Yeah, that's the big opportunity, isn't it? The flexitarian or reducitarian market. Yeah. That broad swathe of people who haven't gone vegetarian but are skipping meat or dairy from their meals. And I understand that in the US it's predicted that plant-based milks will have captured 40% of the dairy industry by 2021. This is the analyst predictions, given how it's taken off, which, you know, whether it does get to that level or not, it's greatly encouraging that people are mixing it up a bit, you know, having a little bit more plant food, a little less livestock, and taking us to what feels, at least to me, to something more of a sustainable diet.
So two things on that. One is I'm a board member of a company called Ripple Foods, which makes a plant-based dairy product with using pea protein as well. But I do think, even if it doesn't get to 40%, I think, to me, I look at the plant-based dairy as a great leading indicator of where meat can be. Currently, in the U.S., 14% of the dairy category is plant-based, but less than 1% of the meat category is plant-based. And I think there's no reason we shouldn't be able to get the meat category toward that 14%, which on its own is a huge transformation.
Absolutely. Change is coming, right?
It is.
And you, going back to your time with politics and Capitol Hill, if you succeeded Donald Trump, what would be the thing which you would change? If you can change one thing, what would that be?
There's so many things. I don't even turn things around 180 degrees. To me, the most concerning thing happening in this era is that our country has lost its ability, the perception or the reputation of being welcoming to diversity, to immigrants, that of supporting human rights around the world. These are things that, in my view, my country had always stood for. And so I certainly would love to see us get back to embracing those values.
Fantastic. Well, Seth Goldman, Executive Chair of Beyond Meat, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today here in London.
Thank you, Philip. And I can't wait to come back and see how the Beyond Burger has been welcomed by the Great Britain community.